Hi, everybody, and welcome to John Hennigan's Old Time Radio Show.
So glad you could join us.
It's going to be really terrific. We got some really wacky, zany old records for you tonight. Boy, oh boy.
It's going to be a swell time.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, we have to talk serious about music.
Okay.
What has happened to music in the last four generations?
Okay, it's August 4th, 2026. R. Crumb is speaking to you about music, and Eden Brower is here to make witty interjections.
What's the date today? July what?
The 4th.
July, what did I say?
It's not the 4th.
It's August 4th.
No. August 4th, right.
It's August 4th.
I know what day it is.
Right.
Okay, so you're going to talk about music.
Cut.
So, I mean, you know, I don't know how many people are aware of this or understand this, how we've been robbed of our cultural heritage deliberately and in a calculated manner. And that might sound paranoid, but it's absolutely true. And it's been done by the business interests. And they didn't sit down in a room and say, let's steal the people's music away from them. But they sat around the room and said, how can we sell the most, you know, copies of records or whatever? How can we sell these stars? How can we sell Elvis Presley? How can we sell Perry Como? How can we sell Neil Diamond? You know, stuff like that. And they sit down and calculate that and figure that out, what it takes. And, you know, over four generations, they have effectively buried what I consider real music under fake music. And modern music is almost, 99% fake. It's not real music. And it's been so many generations now that people have lost touch with what real music is. They don't even know anymore. They don't know what it is. And you can't blame them. They, you know, it's been done to them for money. So it's all just business. Just business.
Me and John use payola.
Right. So we're now living with all this fake music. It's contrived. It's artificial. It's not music. It's fake.
Well, it's everything, you know. It's our culture in general, you know. It's music.
It's the same thing with the food.
It's movies, it's food, it's medicine, it's everything. It's everything. But what people don't understand is, like, the interesting thing about a lot of the records we play on this podcast is that it was right
at that moment
that was starting.
That's right.
Right. So a lot of the music that mm-hmm. made it as far as to be recorded was unaffected yet by it, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
And what happens is, you know, as soon as marketing strategies get involved and start dictating what's popular, what's going to sell,
mm-hmm.
then everybody starts copying those without even thinking about it,
because
they want to be popular, and they want to be able to play in front of audiences and make records.
That's the first generation.
That's the first generation.
Then that the goes next generation
on. Now you're talking 100 years.
Copies the copies. And the third generation copies the copies of the copies.
Right.
So.
And now you're talking 100 years later. And of course, during that time, there are these peaks and valleys. Early rock and roll
out. There's a rising up from the bottom again of something that's sort of authentic. You know, you hear Jerry Lee Lewis. I mean, even as a kid, I remember listening to Jerry Lewis' piano playing and saying, why does he just quit clowning around and just play that fine piano that he can play? But he's always...
Yeah, he was a great piano
player. I read his biography, and they talked about the biography. It's no other than Sam Phillips encouraged Jerry Lee Lewis to clown around. So that clowning around thing you do, that's great. Just do more of that.
Stick.
And just sit. Don't just singing it straight and playing piano, that wasn't enough for to sell a lot of records. You had to clown around because that people loved that. And then when Jerry Lee Lewis appeared on TV, I remember on the Dick Clark show, getting up and jumping up and down on a piano and stuff, because I'm sure Dick Clark and his whole staff of American Bandstand said, yeah, do that stuff that you do where you clown around. That's great. That's what they did the same thing to Fats Waller and many other performers, you know. That's just showbiz.
Yeah, and then, you know, so there's a few things. So there's early rock and roll, there's punk rock, there's rap music. But what people don't realize is that stuff, the systems were already in place to corporatize it and to water it down. So that stuff is immediately taken over by the music industry and, you know, guided.
Well, punk was so ugly that they really had a hard time corporatizing punk.
It took a while. It took a while, but they got it. Yeah.
Did they corporatize punk?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Really? Yeah. Wow. I mean, now you see these, like, ridiculous parodies of punk bands that are like...
Really?
The Lollapalooza.
Yeah, guys with mohawks playing horrible pop music,
wow,
but like really fast.
Yeah, and all the facial...
That's so weird. You realize that punk has actually been around for almost 50 years.
Yeah.
It starts in the late 70s.
Yeah.
But, you know, now we're at a point in pop music anyways where you've had generations that have grown up on this completely corporate...
Yes.
You know...
Contrivance.
Music. Nothing to do with art, you know, nothing to do with music,
or just
nothing to do with personal
the musical expression.
Expression
of the people, which music was originally.
That's what's missing, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, now it's just, you know, any it's formulas that can sell
and
make money.
And I've met lots and lots of young kids in their teens who dreamed of being rock and roll stars. And it wasn't about the music, it was about being a famous rock star. You know, they'd play, like, you know, air guitar and stuff and pretend, make all the expressions like they've seen in the fucking MTV or whatever. Mm. Or, you know, that was the thing. It wasn't about the music because, I don't know, the love of the music gets lost in the shuffle of that kind of showbiz bullshit.
Well, you have a couple of things going on. You have the music industry that's designed to, just like the banking system or... the medical system or any the food system is designed to do one thing, profit, to make more money than it made in the previous quarter.
That's right.
So it will do anything to do that, and has nothing to do with personal expression or art or anything. So that's the business. But then you also have this other thing where the government doesn't want people to be able to express themselves, because so many times social change, when it is enacted, starts or at least is facilitated by the arts, you know. I mean, why did John Lennon have the CIA following him around and have files on him, you know? Because he was talking about peace, you know? Why is it that everybody who talks about peace gets murdered? You know, you know, Martin Luther King, you know, John
Lennon,
JFK.
Nonviolence. That's it was too effective.
Yeah, it's too effective.
And when Malcolm X stopped being a black Muslim, killed him.
Yep. JFK, Martin Luther King, John Lennon, all dead.
Ooh, maybe I better shut up.
Yeah, right.
Okay, let's play a record.
Okay, what are you going to play? Happy Days Are Here Again?
God Bless America.
So tell the kids what the podcast is about today.
I don't know. What's the project?
Oh, I thought you had decided you were going to... play your fantastic dance band records for
okay.
the kids.
I can do that.
Okay.
I got lots of dance band records.
You got another notion.
Dance band records was actually the first old music I got interested in. Hmm. Before I was put off by country music because all I heard was god awful country and western music of the 50s, you know.
Right.
It was just depressing.
Super slick, yeah.
It was just depressing. There stands the glass. I don't know. Even that appears charming and quaint now compared to, you know, what goes on now and what they call so-called country music.
Well, that's what happens over time, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it gets worse and worse. The stuff you didn't like becomes acceptable.
Yeah. I had this book.
What does
history
that say?
History of Country Music. You have that book?
Tony Russell's book?
No, it's like an older book from the 70s or something.
No, I guess not.
It's a hardcover book. History of Country Music. And just like a little bit about the early stuff, like that first generation of people that, you know, developed before there was recording or anything. There's a little bit about that. fiddling John Carson and the Carter family a little bit, and then they go on to Jimmy Rogers, and then it just goes into, you know, the famous country western singers, and it ends, you know, after they get to the toward the present moment when the book was put out, and the whole like last 10 pages just like photos and paragraphs about the business people in the country western business. Shows guys sitting at desks like a, you know, and some kind of a logo emblem made from some country music organization, showing like that picture of the earth with like country music covering the earth. Yeah, you know, it's just more about the business than it is about the music at the end of that book.
So you were attracted to Dance Band Records because you grew up on old cartoons that had the
that's where that starts. So that was the first the thing
early,
I was attracted
early
to.
Early Fleischer's?
That stuff, oh yeah, Max Fleischer stuff, about the among the best. And also the Leroy Shield themes and Hal Roach comedies.
Oh yeah, fantastic.
Laurel and Hardy
music.
And Little Rascals Are Gang.
Absolute tops.
It's just like stuck in my mind. Still to this day, they're stuck in my mind. They're so great, those themes and the orchestrations and everything. That's what really got me started on the dance band stuff. And then when I found there's actual records of that music. Wow. I remember the moment, pivotal moment, which I've described elsewhere.
Yeah.
I was 16 when I discovered Charlie Fry's Million Dollar Pure Orchestra.
Happy days and lonely nights.
Yeah, that's right. And just, that was it. When I heard that, I knew I was going to be collecting records.
Yeah. Really? Right?
Yeah.
16?
I knew.
You're like, this is my life?
I said, this is going to be something I'm going to be collecting the rest of my life.
Wow.
I knew it right there and then. I remember that day I brought home that from the farmer's market, and If I Could Be With You and Zonky by McKinney's Cotton Pickers.
Oh, my God.
And
top records.
Yeah.
You really scored on your first effort.
But I had no idea who they were. They were all completely unknown names to me.
Well, sure. How would you?
Yeah. And a couple others. The Bar Harbor Society Orchestra doing Thanks for the Buggy Ride.
I like that band.
It's great. They're good, yeah.
I
noticed you had a lot of those on your list.
I really like them.
They're good.
Yeah.
They're very good.
When they have a good tune.
Ex-boyfriend made you start collecting 70s.
Yeah, sort of.
He kind of did.
Well, I was already, you know, I started out getting into the music through the LP reissues, you know, so I was already completely, you know, I had every County record, every Yazoo record, which wasn't too hard.
Hmm.
I had discovered Don Kent's labels, you know, Mamlish and Country Turtle, and I was getting into some of Arhuli and, you know, I can't say that, I can't pronounce the name because of dyslexia, but Strachwitz. Yeah, Strachwitz.
Used to just call him the Count.
Can't say it. You know, so I had tons and tons of LPs, and I was resisting collecting 78s because I knew, without even knowing that much about it, that it was going to be a financial burden that was incomprehensible.
That you'd be getting yourself into a...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it all started when Shane found...
We were going to the trash in this flea market in New York City, and then John was like, oh, those are people throw out those 78s, and Shane's like, yeah, they throw out what they can't sell. It's, you know, whatever. Try to sell for a dollar. And what, it was Ukulele Ike, was it?
Yep, Cliff Edwards right on top.
And John was like,
wow.
You know.
Well, I had the reissue that you did the cover for Yazoo, Bear in a Lady's Boudoir. So I loved him already, so I knew who he was.
And John
and it was right
like,
on
I
top, and it
got
was,
this for free?
I hadn't heard it, but it was If You Can't Land Her on the Old Veranda.
I have it.
Yeah, great record. So just the title alone, you know, and it sounds like
it was in the trash.
It was just sitting right on the top of the trash.
Flea market, they throw out, and
maybe it's too heavy to carry back.
Shane was like, doesn't your boyfriend like old music?
I still have it. It's decent condition. It's like E minus.
And I tell Shane, I may have broken up with you, but you got your revenge because I came home one day and all my shit was thrown out, and there was all these records in the room.
Yeah, so then, you know, I got a player.
Yeah,
and it was so great. I immediately knew what I already kind of knew was going to happen. Like, listening to it off the original 78, it sounded so much better. No offense to the guys doing the reissues, but you just can't, like, transfer that stuff
There's a certain presence on the original.
There's a presence.
Yeah, it's weird. It's a weird thing.
So I listened to it over and over and over. And then I started casually looking at eBay, and I already could see the prices were crazy.
Yeah.
But I told myself, okay, I'm just going to buy one more.
And that never works.
You know, back then you could get like Memphis Mini, Me and My Chauffeur for like $10. You know.
Yeah.
So I said, all right, I love Memphis Mini, so I'll get this one. You know. And as soon as I dropped the needle on that, it was over. I just knew when I listened to how good her vocal and guitar sounded on that record. I said, oh, I'm so screwed. You know. And my next purchase was a Gus Cannon Big Road Blues. And that was just a nail in the coffin because it's an absolute masterpiece.
You got Big Road Blues, the seven to Victor?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, back then, that used to turn up quite a bit. I mean, I could do a half hour on records that I used to think were common when I started collecting.
Right.
And eBay opened up a different world from, like, your generation because you only really had access to what was in private auctions, you know, or whatever you could find locally.
That's right.
But eBay really let you know, like, oh, some of these, there's actually a lot of copies out. Like, when I got into 78 Quarterly and I'd see, like, you know, 8 to 10 copies. It was like, I saw 30 copies in the last 2 years.
Yeah,
you know,
right. That was a nonsense about the number of copies that were in existence. That was just very speculative.
But one thing I had going for me is I sold my LP collection for a lot of money.
You did?
Yeah. To get me started.
Really?
Collected vinyls.
78s, yeah.
Really?
Well, I couldn't have both in the apartment. It was one or the other.
Huh.
So I just, after my third 78, I said, that's it. I'm selling all my records. I took them all down to my friend's record store, put them on consignment, and every time he handed me money, I bought 78s with it.
Huh.
That lasted for about 2 years till I was in my bank account.
So how long ago was that? 25 years?
No, more than that, but 30 years ago.
Yeah, you couldn't do that now.
Yeah. No. Well, also, you know, God, I mean...
But then I still hear about young guys that start collecting 78s now in this day and age. Like, you know, Ethan and Kendra, they didn't start that long ago looking for 78s. And he's got some pretty good
There's a lot of
records.
Young guys out there, and they find stuff.
Just
they
have
really
have
well,
money,
and you just have to be...
Money.
You just have to, you know... Start looking in other places, you know.
Well, let's listen to Cliff Edwards doing If You Can't Land on the Old Veranda.
Okay.
Listen, all you love making Romeo, listen. Those who make love at homeos, you do your spooning in a parlor or car. I know a place that's old but better by far. In the winter or summer, spring or fall, here's my advice to you all. If you can't land her on the old veranda, then you can't land her at all. If you can't love her with the moon above her, you'll never get her to fall. Give her a kiss, do it again. Tell her you're from the city where men are men. If you can't land her on the old veranda, then you can't land her at all. If you can't land her on the old veranda, then you can't land her at all. If you ain't kissed her, let me tell you, mister, you'll find your chances are small. Winter may come, what if it's cold? Boy, if you can't keep her warm, then you're growing old. If you can't land her on the old veranda, then you can't land her at all. Say now if you can't land her on the old veranda. box candy, and she'll think you're dandy. It doesn't matter how small. If she's not a peach, that's no disgrace. In the dark, you'll never even notice her face. If you can't land her on the old veranda, then you can't land her at all.
That was quite sexist.
Sexist?
Yeah. I'm just kidding. I listen to, like, the Ghetto Boys.
It's not really sexist.
Well, land her, yeah. If you can't
yeah,
land
it
her.
Is. Buy her a box of candy, even a small one.
She's canceled.
I'm canceled, but I like the Ghetto Boys.
He's
canceled, yeah. Well, it's too
tell
late.
Tell her from the city where men are men.
That's the manosphere.
Whatever
shit.
That means.
Manosphere.
Or you should really play Happy Days and Lonely Nights. You know.
Yeah?
Yeah. The one that started it for you. Nights.
Okay. It's Charlie Fry's Million Dollar Pier Orchestra, which is in Atlantic City. It's still there. But the bands they have now are not so good. Happy Days and Lonely Nights.
My heart a million ways when you took my happy days and left me lonely nights.
Do you regret finding that record ever?
Do I regret finding it?
Yeah.
Do I regret finding this?
Yes.
Why would he regret it?
Not at all. I'm lucky. I'm glad that I discovered this stuff.
Look at all the money you spent. Think of all the presents.
He's got tons of money.
You could buy me and John so many presents with that money.
You ever Google him? He's worth like hundreds of millions of
dollars. No, he's not.
I could have bought a yacht.
You could have crumbs.
That's right. You could be floating
the gold
on your
yacht.
I
and
could
then
be
it
riding around in limousines, sipping champagne.
Sipping champagne.
That's right.
Instead, you're sitting here in this medieval castle listening to Charlie Fry's orchestra.
I could be wearing a diamond ring, 14 carat, 20 carat.
Or a gold chain.
Brilliant shining stone.
Yeah. I mean, he's the one guy, maybe not the one, but he's one of the guys that really can't regret the money, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, the thing is,
plus you got a ton of your records before that big explosion in price, right?
Big explosion?
In the market, I mean, where a lot of these records were relatively cheap when you got them.
Well, I was buying them at secondhand stores for 25 cents. I remember the first time I spent over a dollar on a record, I thought it was really extravagant. And that was from first time I ever bought records from another collector.
Yeah.
You know, I remember it very well. It was Dave Ski.
What did he sell you?
Some country records, some beat up country record.
Those were the days.
Yeah. I thought, now I'm in deep. Now I'm getting in deep. I knew it.
The first time I remember the first Gus Cannon record I bought, it was E condition, but spent $400 on it, and I knew that was too much money.
Yeah, that's crazy, but
there it's crazy,
is.
Yeah.
But now, what's it worth now?
Thousands. It's better than the stock market. I mean, I have money in money markets accounts. I have them in IRAs. I have them in, you know, Fidelity accounts. None of it has done as good as my records.
I remember when I spent $14.
Not that I encourage you to collect records as an investment. I'm not.
But. I feel like you are.
Well, the truth is, it's like I've done better with my records than any of my ridiculous bank investments.
So, remember, kids, 78s are an investment.
Yeah.
And you better start now.
Start now.
It's
while
only
you're
gonna
young.
Go up in value.
Collect
until
now.
It crashes, yeah. Like the stock market.
Buy low, sell high. Inflate the market at all costs.
2029 is gonna be 78
be a type
RPM.
4 collector.
Crash.
Horrible reptilian.
I remember
skull.
Thinking I'd really gone off the deep end when I spent $14 for a copy of Candyman by Mississippi John Hurt.
You
what?
Bastard.
Can
what
I
year
buy
was that?
It was like in the 70s.
Can oh we buy that?
God. Can you imagine? When I was like 6 years old, if I knew what was going on, I could have got Candyman by Mississippi
years
John
old.
Hurt. Just for my cheese doodle money. I could have saved my cheese doodle money for a few months and bought a Mississippi John Hurt.
No, cheese doodles are the shit. Six-year-olds don't collect 78 RPM.
Oh, poor you.
Yeah.
What if Elon Musk starts collecting 78?
Oh, then we're all screwed. He'll just buy them all up. That's it.
He'll put them on a rocket and
send them on to Mars. Oh, my God.
That's great for the Martians.
Okay.
All right, so what's next?
Dance, the Don Bester Orchestra.
Okay.
I think they're from Chicago. The title of this song is Say, Mister, Have You Met Rosie's Sister?
Thank you.
Fun one.
Great band.
John Dester. Have you ever heard I'll Fly to Hawaii by Brad Gowan's Rhapsody Makers?
Yeah, I have it.
You have that? Wow. That's a fabulous record.
That's great. And you gonna play it?
Yeah.
Ooh, your cup is better shaped than mine.
Oh yeah?
It's a great record.
Na 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 na. My coffee's better than your cup.
Your copy will never be as clean as that. Your copy is like a G-. That one's like a store stock. Is
you could almost like pretty clean. Resent another collector for having a better copy than you. You could almost
I would
like hate them.
Like
for
to
that.
Murder
this
them.
This is not the proper mode of reflection.
No, it's not.
We should murder them.
It's a sickness. Okay, this is I'll Fly to Hawaii by Gowan's Rhapsody Makers.
Stuff.
Yeah. I believe that's their only record.
Yeah, I've never seen another one.
That's 1926. 100 years ago.
100
Crazy.
Years.
Oh,
100
Christ.
Years. My
well, at least
God.
We have like those Korean pop bands.
At least everything's going good today.
Yeah.
Everything's going just swell.
As Mozart would say, nowadays they just have a lot of shit. It's a lot of crap. Nonsense. Get lost. That was the last time, 1920s, when they had real music. That was it. Mm-hmm. By the end of the 30s, over, pretty much. I mean, it was a few little fragments here and there in obscure places.
Jazz had been crushed into swing, and country had been crushed into...
Yeah. And even blues, I mean, there was some interesting post-war blues.
Yeah,
like Eric Clapton.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, there was blues. I mean, the thing about blues is it got, you know, solidified into something much more commercial.
Yeah.
But there was always these guys
on
that
the edges,
made it
right.
to the records yeah. that were unaffected yeah. by that. You know.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Charlie Pickett.
Oh, my God. Masterpiece of a record. Yeah.
Right.
A lot of stuff Don Kent put out on his label was from Chicago when he was a kid. It's still, you know, pretty rugged, raw music.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
J.B. Hutto and these guys. When I first heard that stuff, I was like, it made the Chicago stuff that I initially heard sound
yeah.
like really polished and lame.
Yeah, yeah.
These guys were just playing on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Know?
Right.
People have questions about the Big Rock Candy. The Big Rock Candy song.
Jerry Zoltan had this record by a post-war blues guy named Stick Horse Hammond. You ever heard that?
Yeah, I have heard that.
Stick,
yeah.
You heard that's pretty good. It's
yeah.
pretty raw stuff. But there's after the war, they're kind of rare. It's like outstanding, you know, unusual for their roughness or whatever.
Yeah.
Old sounding, old fashioned sounding. I mean, you go through. I've waded through tons of like post-war rhythm and blues stuff, looking for something interesting. And you know, yeah, you know, not too many.
Do you want to hear
a
few?
A formula that's very smoothed out, you know. What'd you say?
Some people have questions.
They have questions?
About the...
questions from the audience?
Is she my girlfriend?
That's a question.
Someone said, I see some tabs on the records on the bottom shelf, but how does he find what he's looking for? Also, I would like to see his turntable and cartridge. They're very demanding.
Okay, so what's your filing system and what's your setup? These are very academic questions.
Ho-hum.
Yeah.
Ho-hum.
You put them in alphabetical order. What do you think?
Alphabetical order.
Someone
by
wrote
and
Roger Wolf Kahn.
Roger Wolf Kahn, yeah.
He said
yeah.
no, he never recorded this.
Huh, what?
All right, your questions are too confusing and vague. Just like, you know, can't follow it.
It's about, is she my girlfriend? So, now let's hear the B-side.
Not so good.
Okay.
B-side's not so good, Dave
yeah.
McCabe. Dave McCabe.
B-side, not so good.
All right, well, questions from the audience didn't work out.
Max no, Fisher does a good version of So Tired, though. It's
yeah.
pretty good.
Yeah.
Great.
But
what kind of speakers are you using?
Oh, Jesus.
Thanks
I don't
for
know.
Sharing.
I don't even know. I don't
he
know
doesn't
what my
know.
Is.
Robert doesn't know the answer.
Let's listen to another record.
Yeah.
Do you have There's a Tear for Every Smile in Hollywood?
No.
That's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
So his last one, I think.
John, where's the best place to get our podcast?
Apple Music.
Apple Music.
Okay, now we're going to hear Be My Baby by the Blue Steel Orchestra.
All right.
It's like 1928.
You know anything about Blue Steel?
It's from the South somewhere. It's like a territory band from the South.
Love this band.
And there's also this crazy stories about him, like he was pissed off at some rehearsal and pulled a gun on the whole orchestra.
That's awesome.
Just like our band.
Yeah, I got some weapons. I know kung fu.
Thank you. drive me crazy, 'cause I'm in love with you. I'd swim across the ocean just to hear you acquiesce. There are a million things I'd do live for the girl that I love best. Oh, be my baby, I won't take maybe, 'cause I want a baby like you. She's my hot baby.
Gotta get one last one.
Oh man, it's so good. So I should say for some of the listeners out there, this is like a the dance band show is a callback to some shows we did a few years ago that I got so much feedback on. A lot of, especially young collectors, asking for more great dance band records from you because you have one of the best dance band collections. And you know, there's so many dance band records out there, and you've sifted through the muck over so many years to keep only the best of the best.
Right.
So, and a lot of people just haven't heard these, even though these records are out there. It's overwhelming.
Yeah.
And even for me, it's overwhelming. I get your advice all the time when I'm buying dance band stuff, because there's so much kind of like mediocre stuff, or maybe it's a good band and a bad tune, or vice versa, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So people really, really enjoyed these shows. I got so much feedback asking for more. So, you know, people should be aware that this is like a real treat to be able to go through your dance band records, because everything that you've kept is an absolute gem, you know?
Yeah. Because, you know, I sifted through tons of dance band records when I was young, would periodically purge my collection, you know, as you've done also, you know?
Yeah.
I remember when I first turned on to that Charlie Fry band, you went out and got all the Charlie Fry records, which a lot of them are not that good. This earlier ones, you got acoustic perfect or whatever.
Well, that's what I went through in the beginning when you would play me a great record by bands, getting super excited. It took me a long time to realize that that wasn't necessarily going to be the case with their other records.
Yeah.
There's a few bands out there where like every record is a hit, and a lot of those dance bands, you're almost like most of their records aren't great, and then there's one masterpiece.
Yeah, that's right.
So they probably were kind of like, you know, not recording maybe their, you know, best tunes, but whatever the
The whole way the business worked then is the, you know, these tune mills that turned out tune songs, and they would then try and push these songs on bands to get them to play the bands, and they would take them to record companies to try to get record companies to record them promoting songs. You know, it was a big business.
Right, because sheet music was the way they made money.
Songs.
Yeah,
and so. Yeah, a lot of mediocre tunes, a lot.
Yeah. So,
and like, and then there's also treat, like the Plaza Music Company and ARC and all that, that they had these bands that were just pickup bands, and the tunes would be put in front of them they'd never played before to record.
Yeah, you can tell 5 minutes into a record sometimes.
It's real lackadaisical.
There's no arrangement. I mean, that Blue Steel we just heard, like the horn arrangements, you know, even just like the last 15 seconds, you know, you're like, wow, you could imagine that they played that song for like several minutes with these big, like, you know, horn parts that were just so, it's heavy, driving, syncopated music with beautiful horn arrangements and interplay. And
right.
Mind-blowing, you know.
And sometimes those kind of bands, like those territory bands like Blue Steel, would write their own tunes often.
Yeah.
And they'd just, they'd be their signature tunes that they would, so of course they would record them, you know.
And a lot of them kind of remind me of, you know, some of the more rural blues and country, in that when they did do a song you knew, they just had unique arrangements and kind of funky orchestrations that, you know, they weren't hip, so they weren't influenced by, you know, whatever was super popular.
Well, they would, it was, some of them aspired to have to make their own distinct sound, so they would buy stock arrangements, and then the band leader or the arranger would stay up all night to like do their make their arrangements more original for their own band, or you know, and for the musicians they had in their band who could do specialty. That guy who's really good on the trumpet or saxophone or something, they'd write parts for him, and you know.
Yeah.
So they
and that's what makes these records so great.
Yeah. I remember talking to Jack Coakley, who was a San Francisco band leader in the 20s. And he said, boy, it was a lot of work. He said he used to stay up to the, you know, 3 in the morning writing arrangements for the latest tunes.
That is a lot of work.
Have distinct arrangements, yeah.
Writing out all the parts.
Yeah,
making a
charts.
Master chart. Yeah,
that's right.
Takes a lot of time.
Yeah, a lot of time. Yeah,
it's
got to
be neat and clear. And
yeah. He said it was a lot of work.
Yeah.
And he was the piano player, too. He said he had pound that piano for dancing.
Yeah.
And all these horns and sections and stuff that, you know, pound a piano. Okay.
What's
you
next?
Ever heard the Phil Baxter Orchestra?
I mean, I know the name, but I can't think of a record offhand. So.
They're from Texas, I think.
Huh.
Phil, I'll play you one. He died young. I'll play one of his records.
Okay. Great ending on that.
Wow. You ever heard G
Joe Ward Swanee Club Orchestra?
Never even
heard
of them.
Hell no.
Great
Is that
name.
Made up? You just made that up.
Yeah, a lot
I
of
could
these
just
band
say,
titles sound made up. For
I
sure.
could say any title. It sounds real.
So, they made one record, Joe Ward's Swanee Club Orchestra, and you know anything about them. Then I was reading like an old issue of, what's that name?
Goldmine?
That music magazine, Metronome.
Metronome, yeah.
Yeah. And they mentioned a Swanee Club.
Oh, yeah?
It was in the Bronx.
Really?
Yeah.
It's not where I would picture the Swanee Club.
The Swanee Club. And Joe Ward was actually the owner of the club. He wasn't the band leader.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This stuff's tricky like that. You don't, you know.
Yeah, a lot
How
of the,
you know?
The guys on these dance band records who have the name weren't necessarily even on the records.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, yeah, if you could spend like all this time looking for Joe Ward and as a band leader and get nowhere.
Yeah,
I just
yeah.
happened to stumble across this little piece in an old issue of Metronome, which
yeah,
you know, often had little blurbs by band leaders. And you know, and I was looking through this issue from 1931, and there was a picture of my Uncle Frank in there.
Yeah, that was, and you know what was even weirder about that? I don't know if you remember this, but you asked me if I ever see metronomes around, and I said, yeah, I do. And you said, well, if you ever see any, you said, you know, pick them up for me. And then you told me that you had an uncle that played in a dance orchestra. And you said, you know, maybe, you know, I'll find something on him. And the very first issue I found and sent you had that photo.
Really? Is that it?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's kooky,
I forgot
right?
that. Wow.
Isn't that kooky?
That's weird.
Yeah.
he had a band, Frank Jackson in Philadelphia. This little blurb about him. So he was popular with the college kids.
Too bad they never got recorded.
Yeah, and they never recorded. But, you know, no one in my family ever mentioned that. Michael Frank and his dance band.
But that goes back to how musicians are looked down upon, right? Like people don't necessarily think...
It wasn't a point of pride with them.
No.
It's
just terrible.
I asked my Aunt Catherine about it. Said, I saw this thing about... Uncle Frank, there was a picture of him proudly holding his banjo and a little blurb about this band in Philadelphia that he had. I said, do you know about that? She said, yeah. Yeah, we knew. Yeah.
Unreal.
I said, wow, to me that's like a point of pride in my family, you know, that some of my uncle had. You know. When I knew him in Delaware, he had a little print shop. He had a little printing business. Because it was like a printing worker strain, and my grandfather was a press man and printing presses and stuff. My mother's family, so that's what he ended up doing. Okay.
What's next?
I'm gonna play Joe Ward's Swanee Club Orchestra.
Oh yeah, right.
Yeah. I mean,
if you found this record on a list or something on eBay, wouldn't go for much.
No. Thank you.
So both the tunes on the both sides of this record are credited to a composer named Pat McCarthy. Hmm. So I looked him up in the jazz discography, and he was a member of the Bernie Cummins Orchestra.
Oh, really?
So
another great band.
This might be the Bernie Cummins band.
Huh.
I don't know. Joe Ward is just a club owner.
Yeah, weird, right? Yeah, they could have played there.
Yeah. I don't know. Doesn't sound like the Bernie Cummins, but
it doesn't, but
it's
you never
Plaza,
know.
So
some of the guys, you know.
It's Cameo. So who knows? Yeah.
Yeah, who knows?
And there's a lot of shifting around of musicians and stuff then, so.
Yeah, sure. I'm sure guys had all kinds of sub bands and side bands.
Yeah. Here's a band called Bill Hogan and His Pear Marquette Hotel Orchestra.
Wow, never heard of that. Okay.
Pear Marquette was the, you know, Father Marquette, who explored the upper Midwest, the Great Lakes region in the, you know, 18th century or something, early 19th century. So this band is from somewhere in the upper Midwest, probably.
This is on a Mexican vocalion.
This?
Yeah, it has a little.
They had. It wasn't. They sold some of these in Mexico, so they would put the song title in Spanish below the English title. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
They did that sometimes. Yeah, Victor did that too as well.
Interesting.
Yeah, for the Spanish market. This is called "Who Wouldn't Be Jealous of You."
Thank you.
Minneapolis. It's from Minneapolis also. Did I tell the story about that movie? I wonder, because...
Tell it again.
So I was talking to my aunt, my father's sister, before she died. What was her name? I forget her name now. Shit. Anyway, because when my father was overseas during World War II, my mother was staying with his family in Minnesota. And this aunt of mine would babysit for us. She was a teenager at the time. And so later when I saw her, she was very old. And she said, "Your mother was so nice. She was so generous. She took me up to Minneapolis to the Marigold Ballroom. And we danced to some swing bands." I thought, "Oh, Marigold Bar." I had that Marigold Entertainers record. Huh?
Yeah. It's great.
Yeah, Rich. Hey, this is the Henry Thies and his Castle Farm Orchestra. You notice that none of these dance orchestra records we played are black bands.
No.
No.
They, at the time, that in the 20s, the record companies only wanted the black bands to play jazz. So we got all these white bands playing these popular tunes, because black bands would play the pop tunes also for dancing, but the record companies had this...
Same thing they did with blues, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Right.
But wouldn't you call, like, McKinney's Cotton Pickers a dance orchestra?
It was, yeah. It was a dance orchestra. And once in a while they would do pop tunes, they would do something, and Precious Little Thing Called Love and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I should play that, actually.
Why don't you play this and then play that?
Yeah, okay. That's a very fine version of both those tunes. That
play them both, yeah.
Yeah, okay. This is Henry Thies doing Angry. For Victor later on.
Really?
Late 20s. They're nice.
Oh,
also,
yeah, yeah.
Sounds very different from this. You know that tune Do Something, right?
Yeah, I have this record.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do Something by McKinney's Cotton Pickers.
Yeah. So great.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful.
So can I make a request for the last record?
No.
Well, yes, you can.
You may not get it.
May.
Well, you were just saying how there was no black dance orchestra, so it made me think of some, jazz bands doing pop tunes.
Yeah.
How about Earl Hines doing Sweet Ella May?
Oh, yeah. Very good idea. Very good idea.
Johnny.
Perfect, perfect finish.
There, I got it. All right, well, thanks for doing it.
Do you have this record?
Yeah, I have that record.
It is a
great record.
Yeah.
I needed that record. Yeah. What's the other song? Oh, yeah. Thanks for doing it.
My pleasure.
I think I speak for the kids out there when I say a fun time was had by all.
What about my thank you?
I just want to help
thanks for being
kids.
Here.
Find their way back. Find their way back from this fucking briar patch brambles of modern pop music.
Yeah. I mean, between, electronic computer music and AI, we got to get
Taylor
back to
Swift.
The basics, Pick up an instrument.
Why do you hate Taylor Swift?
Learn some old pop tunes.
That's right.
If you're unhappy with the state of the music world, make your own music.
You're depressed? Take up the banjo.
That's right.
That's a good one.
Music self-played is happiness self-made.
That's right.
Thank you.
As for the audience, so long for a while.
We love
That's
you.
That's all the songs for a while.
We love you. We love your audience.
Thanks for tuning in to John's old-time radio show.
Ooh, that was nice.
Please join us next time, where John will chastise you, call you stupid, and say fuck off. Thank you and good night.
Well,
That's great.
I'm going to use that in every show. Every show is going to end
That's
with that
a career
from now on.
You could have had.